There are a few that will partner with less experience because they want to grow with them, right? Because they know they look for people that are really hungry to grow and scale this business, because then they know that they can keep feeding them, right? Putting more and more of their money to work in this asset class.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
What's going on, everyone? I'm Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. Welcome back to another Multifamily Monday episode. As I said, I'm your host, and we're going to finish up on a three-part series on how to raise private money. But before I get into that, housekeeping as always, just want to thank everyone who is listening. I see downloads going up and up and up, and I am extremely grateful for that. I really hope I'm bringing you value. That's why I'm doing this. Just want to give back and share what's helped me along my journey in investing in multifamily apartments, and hope that can be of value to you all. But as always, if you are finding value, I would be greatly appreciative if you would share the show with someone else who could also get that value. And then if you haven't left a rating review already, that would also be awesome, as that's what gets us in the Apple, up in the rankings in Apple podcasts through their algorithm. They really weigh heavily on ratings and reviews. So if you could take the time to do that, I would be indebted to you. All right. So we are on part three, and this is on institutional partners. But before I get into that, let's just do a quick recap on the first and second part of this series. So as you know, we've been talking about raising private money, right? Part one was your network, your friendships, your relationships. And in my opinion, how I've stated, I think this is the most powerful and most beneficial of all three strategies, but it is the toughest, most time-consuming strategy that we'll be talking about. And that's because it's coming from you, right? So these are friends, family, people within your network, former colleagues, people that you're meeting every day. And it takes a lot of time to not only find these investors, but to cultivate and continue to grow those relationships. Because after all, this shouldn't be a transactional business. It should be a relationship business. People say network is your net worth. And I 100% agree with that. But with the caveat that your network, it should be building relationships, not just these transactional business partner, investor type of network, but relationship network. Like you're actually trying to foster a relationship that's going to last a long time. And that's what your goal should be. And so to me, as I mentioned, this is probably the best way to do it, in my opinion, just because if you find a deal, you've already, condition might not be the right term, your investors already know the type of deal you're going to be bringing them. So when you find a deal, you don't have to then go and try to convince them, right? It's just straight pitching the deal. This is the deal. This is the deal we always bring, type of deal we always bring to you. Do you want to invest, right? And they say yes or no. And then you acquire the deal, and it's just you for the most part, right? Because when I say you the most part, I mean, talk about the general partnership. You still might have, you know, a key principal and other strategic partners, but not in terms of raising capital, right? So these are all your investors. So there's going to be less managing of personalities within the general partnership, which, you know, hopefully that's not a big deal. Hopefully you're aligned with the right people, that it's just really copacetic and flows easy. But it may not be, right? And you probably run into those circumstances where it's going to be managing personalities and emotions, right? But if you're taking this deal down yourself and raising the capital from your own list, that's going to be less general partners that you're going to have to manage, right? There's going to be less of that Monday morning quarterback, right? The backseat driver, there's going to be less of that. And so to me, that's the best way to do it, right? Because one, like I mentioned, you're not having to go explain why this is the type of deal they should be investing. They already know that's the type of deal that you're going to be bringing to them, and that's what they want to invest in. And then two, it's just less of you managing other personalities within the general partnership. It's just you and your team managing investor relationships, which, as I've mentioned in the past, is very crucial and very important. So to me, this is the best way to do it, but it takes a lot of work, and it's easier to run out of runway or bandwidth, right? Because you're going to want to do so many deals, but your only hurdle, if you can keep up with network growing that investor list on pace with how many deals you're trying to do. So that's when it gets tough. And that's when you got to bring in these other partners, like we talked about in part two, the strategic partners. These are other capital raisers. They usually solely focus on raising money. They're not focused on finding deals. So they're focused on finding money and then putting it into a deal from someone who is focused on finding a deal. And these are also a great way to do it because they're generally like-minded in the sense of, you know, they come from the same background. They're not like an institutional player. They're like you, everyday person getting into this business. And so generally they have kind of the same mindset when it comes to how to set up a structure, a deal, manage a deal. And sometimes they're even like hands-off when it comes to managing it. They're like, I'm partnering with you because you're the deal finder operator and I'm comfortable with you. Like I mentioned, part two, this it's about building relationships with these people too, because they're not just going to throw their investor money at you. They want to know, like, and trust you, see that you have a good track record and that they have faith putting their investor money and probably their own money in on one of your deals. So if you're not the part where you can just solely raise all the money yourself for your deals, I think that's also the strategic partners is a great way to do it. And you can kind of combine and marry the two, right? And when I say marry, I just mean those two strategies, not necessarily having to do every deal with a strategic partner. And that's what's great about it. They're strategic partners, right? So you can bring them into certain deals and not to other deals. And from their standpoint, they might want to come and do a deal with you on this type of deal, but not maybe not on the next one. And that's perfectly fine. So now we come to, and before I get into that, the downside of that is obviously you got to give up more GP, right? More of your general partnership to bring them on. You might give up some of your say in terms of operating, but hopefully not too much. So hopefully they're coming to operate with you because of your track record as an operator. But then sometimes if you're new to the game, then it's like you're probably both operating together, right? Because you're a deal finder, they're raising capital and you're both kind of maybe newer. And so maybe you take the operations job together. And now we're going to talk about what part three is about, and that's institutional partners. And the way I see this coming into play is if you're really trying to scale fast and one, you're personal investor list is not big enough. And two, you either don't have enough strategic partners or you're just trying to scale so fast that it just wouldn't be able to do it with strategic partners because maybe they're only able to raise 500 to 2 million each, right? And you're trying to take down deals that a capital raise, an equity raise of $10 to $20 million, right? This is when you find institutional players. And when I say institutional players, I mean private equity. So these are firms that raise money from private investors, generally ultra wealthy clients, and they already know that they want to invest in multifamily, but they're not in the business to operate a deal, right? They're going to find partners, operators that they can put their investor money to work with. And all they have to do is just due diligence on the operator, see what kind of deals they bring, their track record, how they performed in the past. And then also they will do due diligence on each individual deal, but the first step is to do it on the operator. And kind of the benefits of these guys is that they write big checks, right? Generally, private equity, family office. And when I say family office, think of someone who is extremely wealthy. It can be less than $100 million, but generally when I think about $100 million, billion dollars, it can be less. It can be tens of millions of dollars, but they're going to have their own personal asset manager, wealth manager. As the higher in wealth you get to a point where your family office, all they do is work for your family, one family, right? As you go down on that wealth spectrum, these family offices might work for a multitude, for a few families, but their sole focus is on just investing these families' assets and getting whatever target return. It could be anything, you know, it could be maybe they're just looking for 8% per year, right? Who knows, whatever it happens to be. And they're going to diversify, right? So there's going to be some stocks, bonds, and, you know, real estate amongst other asset classes. And you have pension funds, you'll have insurance companies, and then obviously the private equity and family office I just mentioned. And so, like I said, they already know they want to be in this asset class. They just don't want to be an operator. So they want to partner with a skilled operator that has a solid track record. And then, like I said, they write big checks. They tend to have a minimum of $5 million, right? So they won't write a check for less than $5 million, right? Usually it's, you see a lot of them operate between 5 to 25 million, 5 to 30 million. Some of them are even bigger. They'll write bigger checks, but that's kind of the sweet spot I've seen. So meaning, and they usually only do 80 to 90% of the raise. So it's not like you could bring them a $5 million raise because they're most likely not going to do 100%, right? So you're going to need at least around 5.5 to 6.25 million to be able to hit that minimum of $5 million. So if it was a $10 million raise, they would bring anywhere from $8 to $9 million, one check, right? And then you would bring you the general partnership, which includes them. Some of the time they will raise money too. You'd have to bring the remaining $1 to $2 million. And that can be from your own list, right? It doesn't have to be from you yourself, right? It's just you have to raise that $1 to $2 million. So that's the easy button and a great way to scale. Obviously, they want to see a track record for the most part, right? So that's when you can, like I mentioned in the past, you can strategically partner with like a KP who you'll give part of your general partnership to that does have a track record and they can feel more comfortable. And there are some groups out there that actually will partner with people that don't have a robust track record. Maybe they've just gotten into the game because they want to scale with them. And usually when that happens, they do take more of an active role in asset management. But like I said, there's not many of them. There's a few of them, right? Because as I mentioned before, a lot of these, they don't want to operate. They're not in the business of operating. They're just in the business of getting their clients a return. So they'll partner with experienced operators. But there are a few that will partner with less experience because they want to grow with them, right? Because they know they look for people that are really hungry to grow and scale this business because then they know that they can keep feeding them, right? Putting more and more of their money to work in this asset class. So there are those strategic partners out there. And it's funny where they all come from and backgrounds. I've heard there's a family office who invested with a company my friend worked for, and they were, I'm not going to name any names, but kind of like a shake company, you know, like protein shakes and different health shakes. If you heard the name, you'd know them very well. They're nationwide known, actually probably even globally known. But anyways, they wanted to invest in student housing. And this was several years ago. So yeah, they invested with this group because this group had experience in operating, investing in student housing. So they would just write checks, right? And then personally, there's a group I've been in talks with, full transparency, I haven't not done with deal with them yet, right? But they are partnered with a family of a really famous video game company. If, again, not naming any names, if I was to say the name, you would know it. And this family is interested. They have invested in multifamily in the past, but they're interested right now in really growing that portion of their portfolio. And they want to take the approach where it's not only do they write that check, but they also take somewhat of an active role in the operations and they want to scale with someone. So we've been in talks with them as well. And then it's just funny, you'll get just private equity where they go raise the money. They have clients who do deals. So they'll raise from several people and it's not just one person, right? But the check from either family office or private equity will just be one check, right? So it'll be like, here comes $5 million. And it's the easy button. But the downside to it is obviously the majority of your raise is coming from one entity. So they can have a lot of leverage over you, right? And it's also, if you've never done business with them, I've heard where someone was going to partner with private equity and at the last hour, they decided not to invest in the deal. And up until that point, it was green light. And the operator was 100% confident the money was going to come. And then they just decided, no. Luckily, operator was able to get an extension and then raise money from other partners they had partnered with and they were able to do the deal. But that's something else you have to be aware of because it's not like they're not going to sign anything up front saying that they're going to partner with you on this deal, right? If something better comes along or if something happens where they decide that day they don't want to do it, then they won't. So that's kind of scary, right? There's also another thing I want to make everyone aware of that I've heard about. I personally haven't experienced this, but I know people that I trust that have, and sometimes they'll ask for some type of fee up front. If maybe they're like brokering the relationship, if that's ever the case, do not pay it. I've heard of people losing $50,000, $75,000, $100,000, where there's this one guy who's brokering these relationships. Person just ran off with all the money, several different operators. So be very careful. I would highly recommend do not give any money up front. Type of structuring any type of deal. And even that, you got to be careful giving money anyways because of SEC regulations. You can't pay a fee for raising money unless the person is licensed, right? But anyways, I digress on that part of it. So like I was saying, this is a great way to scale fast and really just grow because they can write big checks. You just got to be careful because they have a lot of leverage over you because it's just they're writing 80 to 90% of the equity raise. But it is kind of the easy button. And another downside I forgot to mention is how you're generally going to have to structure the deal in terms of return metrics or capital structure of the deal. Because traditionally, what a lot of syndicators do is they have I mentioned this before, they have a pref and then some type of back-end split and maybe like a simple waterfall, right? But when it comes to institutional players, it can get very complex, right? And they're going to want a lot of the deal, right? But then there's some that don't, right? There's some that just, I've heard some that are just looking for, I want an 8% cash on cash return, right? But then there's some who want really in-depth waterfalls where you have a pref, say it's 8%, and then anything above that is split based on the percentage of equity that was brought. So if they brought 80 of it and you brought 20 of it, then anything above that, you only get 20%. Anything over that 8 pref from the cash flow, and then they get the remaining 80. On the back end, there's a waterfall to meet certain return profiles. Usually they want, like I said, that 8%, 8 to 10% cash on cash. Then they want generally 15% or greater IRR, internal rate of return. And then they're usually looking for, I would say, a 1.9, 2.1, 2.2x equity multiple. So essentially, a lot of them want to be able to double their money in 5 years. And then there'll be waterfalls to break that down. So once you get to that, say it's 15% IRR, they get 100% of the money to that 15% IRR. And then from 15 to say 16, it's 70-30 to them. And then anything over 16% is 50-50. And it can even get in more depth, but I don't want any eyes to glaze over or to confuse anyone. But it can get really in depth into how these waterfalls are structured. So that's the only downside. Generally, you don't, in the industry, it's called the promote, what you make over that return, right? And generally, the GP, the promote isn't as big when you're playing with institutional players, which I get, right? Like I said, it's the easy button. They're going to write you a huge check, but these are sophisticated investors that want a certain type of return. So just be wary of that, but it's a great way to scale. And I think all of these strategies I've talked about from part one now to part three are great. And they have great times to use every one of them. And there's not so good times to use them as well. I view myself using them all throughout my career. Different times, obviously, as I mentioned, once I kind of really get further along my career, I would like to be primarily where I'm just raising from my own investors, right? But that takes time because it takes time building a list that's big enough to at least take as many deals down that I want to, right? And so it's going to take some time, but willing to put in that work, I'll do what it takes. And I hope you are too. Guys, I hope this episode was valuable. All these partners have their pros and cons, and none of it should be taken lightly. You should do your homework, research. And before you partner with anyone, especially, really get to know them as a person and can you really trust them? Because we're talking about people's hard-earned money that we're investing in these deals here, right? That's how I always think about it. Obviously, I look at what my company, my partners, myself are going to make out of the deal. But first and foremost, I look at what are my investors getting out of it? Is this a good deal for them above anything and everything? That comes first. As I've said, it's always return of capital before return on capital. Obviously, return on capital is the name of the game, what we're trying to, but I'm never going to swing for that grand slam if there's a chance that I could lose someone's money, right? I'll get the single and double every day to make sure that nothing's going to happen to that principal. And that's what's important. And you also got to look out for yourself too when you're partnering with some of these partnerships. And all I'm just trying to say is do your homework, do your research, and don't just jump into anything real quick because you think it's going to, you see the gold at the end of the rainbow. Really, really take your time. Well, everybody, I hope this was a good episode. Really appreciate you all tuning in as always. And if you have any questions, best way to find me, Instagram at Shauna Wins or LinkedIn. Oh, that reminds me before I end it. LinkedIn, you're probably wondering, well, Sean, where do I find these institutional partners? Glad I caught myself before ending the episode. LinkedIn is a great way to find them. Also going to different conferences, some of the big multifamily like networking and educational ones, you'll find some there, but not too many. I've met some there where, because they know that's where some operators are going looking for money. But then there's some more industry specific conferences where it'll be like a lot of big players, institutional players, private equity, family office, billionaires. Those are some great conferences to go to. And then LinkedIn. LinkedIn's where I've met the most of them. It's a combination of me reaching out and them reaching out. Recently, it's been more of them reaching out to me. And again, it's developing a relationship. Just because I had one Zoom call doesn't mean they're going to invest in my next deal, or it doesn't mean I'm going to want them to invest in my next deal, right? Bring their investor capital. It takes time. It takes many calls, many back and forth on showing potential deals and talking about our underwriting versus theirs, what they're looking for, how we operate. It's all that stuff. And it takes time. But those are the two places I would go to meet these. Obviously, if your network, if you have anyone in finance, I would go to your network and ask if anyone knows anyone in private equity or any family offices that allocate a portion of their portfolio to real estate, which I would imagine a lot do. So that's where to go. That's where to find them. Obviously, I think LinkedIn's the best right now, but you can really find them in a lot of different places. All right, everybody. Well, I'm actually ending it this time. Hopefully everyone did get a lot of value out of it. And yeah, if you need anything, just reach out. All right, everybody. Have a great week. Get after it.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and, of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.